Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregiver Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am Polly Whitehorn, your host for today's show, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. Today we are going to focus on online counseling for caregivers. I am very pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Dr. Marlene Mayhew, Editor-in-Chief of the SelfHelpMagazine.com, which has served over 35 million consumers since 1994. She is a California licensed psychologist and the executive director of the Telemental Health Institute, where she oversees a best practices certificate program in telepractice for psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, and counselors. Dr. Mayhew has served on over a dozen committees, task forces, and work groups at the American Psychological Association, the American Telemedicine Association, the American Counseling Association, and the California Psychological Association. Dr. Mayhew, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, well, before we get started, I just wanted to share with our audience when I went to look at the selfhelpmagazine.com website, and I was very pleased to see that one of the lead articles is entitled Who Cares for the Caregivers, and I just think that is just so timely.
Yes, we tried to produce that for your audience. As a matter of fact, we tried to get that together so that people have some sense that those of us that are on the professional side are aware of the many issues that go on for caregivers and are trying to address them as best as possible. And I really think that today's topic is right in line with that, is how caregivers can get help themselves.
Well, why are consumers so interested in getting help online?
Well, there's the immediacy of it. If you can find somebody without having to talk to 15 people and see who they think is good, or deal with your insurance company mediating, you know, who you can talk to, who you can't talk with, there are, you know, there's that immediate effect of this is accessible to me. Also, the fact of not having to go anywhere. Some people that are caregivers can't leave the home all that easily without needing to find somebody else to sit with the person they're caring for. So it's a challenge just find time to get away. There's also the stigma of going to a mental health office that unfortunately our leading professional associations have not been able to reduce, despite some valiant efforts. The idea of sitting in a waiting room to see a mental health professional sort of smacks of there's something wrong with me. And it's too bad, because the whole idea of mental illness has a negative slant, as if there's something that we're deficient in, that if you have diabetes, you're not deficient in that quantity or that thing. It's just you have diabetes. It's an illness, and that happens to people. So in a mental illness, there's been the stigma. So, you know, if you don't have to go to a waiting room, it's a lot easier. You just sit in your home. Call somebody up or talk to somebody on the net.
What are the differences between online chat with a counselor, social worker, psychologist, or psychiatrist, and the traditional office-based mental health?
Well, they're significant. People tend to think that it's the same, and the truth is that when you go visit a licensed professional. And let me just back up a little bit and talk about licensed professionals as opposed to non-licensed professionals. If you think about a licensure, sort of like a driver's license. Licensure, when you go to get your driver's test, means you passed, and all you did was you met the minimum requirement for being able to drive, to park, parallel park, you know, do all those things. It doesn't mean you're a good driver. It just means that you've met the minimal criteria. And that's true of licensure for professionals across the board. Accountants, attorneys, physicians, and mental health professionals. It just means that at some point in time, they knew the law enough and they knew their discipline enough to pass licensure. And if you go to a professional that doesn't have that minimum criteria that they've met, it's the Wild West. You don't know who you're getting. The government put licensure in place to help sort between people that were responsible and those that are not. So just as they have our driver's licenses. So that's why they require licensure for driving. They also require licensure for practice. Now, many professionals that are licensed learn to practice in person, which means that not many of them, all of them did. There are not yet there's not yet training in our graduate schools, and I'm talking in any discipline in mental health, to deal with people in email or in chat rooms or on telephone. I've not seen any formal program to talk about that, or on video. So all of the media that we could possibly use on the internet, we've not been trained to do. So there's a fair amount of training that clinicians need to have to be able to make up for the fact that when you shake their hand, if you're trembling, they pick that up. If you're sweating profusely, they pick that up. If your hand is freezing cold, they pick that. All of these are clues. If you just could imagine one simple one, the sense of smell. If you are showered, the clinician can sense that the minute that they walk in your presence. If you've not showered for 2 weeks, they will know that. And the line of questioning that you're likely to get is very different than if you had showered. You can imagine if you haven't showered in 2 weeks, they would want to know where you're living. They'd want to know who you're with. They'd want to know a lot of things that they won't bother asking if you are properly groomed. So you see, we can't pick that up by telephone. Just that one element, the smell, we can't pick up by telephone, by email, by chat, by video. So we're at a deficit, and if folks haven't received the training to know how to compensate for that deficit, then you may not be getting the same level of care. So one of the big tips that I'd want to give your audience is if you're going to hire somebody, find out if they've gotten specific training in working in whatever media they're offering you services in. If they're telling you they can treat you in email, and they've treated 5,000 other people in email, it doesn't mean that they've gotten proper training in doing that. Just as if someone's an alcoholic who's no longer drinking, it doesn't mean they know how to help you with your alcoholism. Because what's required is that, if you just go back to the alcohol example, is that no matter what your sobriety is, if you want to work with consumers, you, as a licensed professional, you need to have a course in drug and alcohol etiology, which means how people become alcoholic. There are multiple reasons for becoming alcoholic. Genetic component is a large one. And then just somebody's, how they cope with stress is another large one. So there are many factors that could contribute. You have to study all of those. You can't just assume that the reason you became alcoholic is why everybody else is becoming alcoholic. And then you have to look at various treatment possibilities, then you have to match that up with the person sitting in front of you. So you have to take a formal training course or courses to be able to call yourself an expert in alcohol treatment. Same thing is true of working online. It's not yet required, but if you look at the guidelines that are coming out by the national associations right now, training is called for. Specific training in the media that you're being treated in. So if somebody's working with you on video, then they should be able to demonstrate to you that they've taken a course for that. If I were a consumer, I would ask, what's the course? When did you take it? What's the name of the course? What did it cover? Mm-hmm. If the professional gets tweaked about answering that, go on to another professional. Professionals who get upset by a consumer asking for their credentials, they're being inappropriate. If the professional gets upset when a consumer asks for their credentials, the professional is being inappropriate.
I'm so glad you said that twice, because I really want to make sure our audience hears that, because that's great. That's great. Now, there's so many different ways to – so many different versions of the media. Does it matter if they use email, text messaging, or video, or is it all the same?
That's a really good question. It's not all the same, because the research in what's called telepractice, all right, delivering services remotely. Tele means distance, so delivering services through distance, was started in telepsychiatry in 1959. So we have over 60 years of research, and that research has been in video. Why? Well, the government supports that. The government is what is the group that funded this. Not only our government, but governments across the world have funded research in video treatment because it's the closest thing we have. If you're sitting in a session with me and your entire body is calm except that your foot is tapping wildly, I want to know that. That means I said something that somehow has gotten you, gotten some type of emotional response out of you, and so your foot is tapping uncontrollably, or your knee might be jumping uncontrollably. Okay, those are signs of anxiety. As a clinician, it's my job to see that. If I don't see it, then, if I just say on the phone, I don't see it, then I'm operating at a disadvantage. My disadvantage becomes your disadvantage when you're my client, you see, because I can't do my full job because I don't have all the tools I was trained to use when I'm treating. So it's very important that we maximize the number of cues the clinician has when they do an assessment on you. It's sort of like asking your general doctor to give you an okay, give you a physical without palpating your abdomen. Not a good idea. So you want to have the ability to maximize the input that they get. Email strips even the audio component out of an exchange. So if you're getting upset, I could generally hear it in your voice tone. You're talking to me on the telephone, as we are right now. But if you do that in email, you might be furious, and yet your statement be very, very calm. The other thing that clinicians learn, and that puts email at a disadvantage as well as chat, is that email can be written over time. You can start an email today and finish it 3 weeks from now. That the idea of process is a very big one when we do mental health work, which is not only what you told me, but how you told me, and not only in the voice amplitude, and not only the decibel level that you hit when you say something to me, but it's, did you say it after? Did you cry immediately after you were laughing? Were you laughing very loudly at one point, and before that you had a long period of silence? So you see the silence, the loud laughter, the immediate tears. This is not a normal sequence. If I'm stripped of that and all I'm doing is listening or reading your words in email that say I'm upset, I can't operate the same way I would as if you were in my presence. So practitioners that work in email are working at huge deficits. And the other thing is that there's not a whole lot of research to support that kind of work. Most of the research has been funded by the federal government and other funding agencies in this country and others to work in video. So, yes, you'll see people working in email. And there are legitimate groups doing that. It's just that what I see on the Internet is that most people that operate in email have not been trained, are not aware of the literature, are not bothered by the fact that they don't know the literature and they haven't gotten trained, and they're making a fairly good paycheck quite easily.
Interesting. Now, what's the fuss about all those professionals who are practicing online and available over state lines? Why are there rules against that?
Well, our states back in the 50s decided that they wanted their professionals to be licensed, and that, I believe, is the vast majority of states in the 50s did this. For one reason and one reason only, for consumer protection. Because when a state's citizens were having a problem with some type of healthcare professional, they didn't know where to go. They would go to their state government. Our state government is pretty much who we go to for any problem we're having in a state. And so the government started realizing, gee, we need to have some oversight over these professionals that are doing all kinds of services. Once again, the attorneys, the accountants, the mental health, the physicians. And so they started setting up these licensing boards. Those licensing boards rule by state. So when I went and got my California psychology license, I also have an MFT license. When I went and got both my licenses, marriage, family, and therapy.
Could you just share with the audience what an MFT license is?
Marriage, family, therapist license.
Okay.
It's a master's level license, and then the psychology one's a doctor level license.
Okay.
The people that gave me the tests and that subsequently interviewed me, we had to have an oral exam at the time, asked me questions about things I needed to know in my community. Where are the drug and alcohol treatment facilities? Where are the local emergency rooms? Which hospitals had emergency rooms? Where were the crash houses? If somebody came to me in my office, where would I send them if they were not able to stay on their own that
mm-hmm.
night? If they didn't have family or somebody that would take them in. I needed to know all that about the local resources. The requirements have not changed. As a professional, I still need to know that about everybody I treat. Now, let's say I'm in California and I'm treating somebody in Michigan. How am I going to know what the local resources are? Do I jump on Google? How do I tell what's good in Google, what's not good? It's not appropriate for me to be using Google, you see. I need to know, before I treat anybody, what the local resources are in their community. As a matter of fact, it's one of the guidelines issued by the American Telemedicine Association just 2 weeks ago. They just published their guidelines. The American Psychological Association is coming out with guidelines in a few weeks. All the leading associations are coming out with guidelines to support the idea that professionals need to be aware of and in communication with local resources for people they're
mm-hmm.
treating. So the idea of licensure is an antiquated one, given the technology today, but it's still in force. So we need to respect the fact that I, in California, am not licensed to treat somebody in Michigan. If I do, then I could very well be sued for malpractice. I could very well, for violating the conditions of my licensure, if something goes wrong. You see, that will come into play if something goes wrong. If a consumer gets hurt, let's say I'm treating your husband because he's feeling suicidal, and I'm doing that in any of the modalities, online, email, video, voice, you know, which is in essence phone, but you can run it that through the internet chat room, and he suicides. You have a family around you that's likely to encourage you to look into what was his treatment about. Why didn't the therapist catch that?
Mm-hmm.
That's why he went to therapy. What went on there? You have a legitimate reason to explore that. If the licensing board finds out that I wasn't licensed in Michigan, now I'm in big trouble because I was not licensed to do that, you see. So there are severe penalties for doing that kind of thing, not only in my state, because I'm in California, but possibly in Michigan, for violating the rights of treating a Michigan citizen without Michigan's approval of my being a professional in their state. So it gets into some very dicey issues when clinicians are doing that. And the real problem is that people that are doing that, I really don't think, are doing it maliciously. I think professionals that are delivering this kind of service don't know. But the truth is, it's their job to know.
Mm-hmm.
It's, when you're a licensed professional, that's why they license you. It's your job to know things related to your licensure. And some professionals simply haven't gotten the education needed to be delivering the services they are already delivering. So then it falls on the consumer to know. If you want someone to treat you in your state and you want someone who's really up to date and understands what they're doing, get someone that's practicing in their state of licensure. Ask them, are you licensed in my state? I'm in Michigan or Iowa or wherever you are. Are you licensed to practice in my state? Can I have your license number? And then go to the state board and make sure that they're licensed.
Mm-hmm.
Because there could be any number of people masquerading themselves to be licensed professionals on the internet. And you won't know that till you go to the licensing board and check them out. Just like if you hire a contractor for your house. They say, don't just trust the guy because he has a nice letterhead and a nice shirt and a nice truck when he drives up to your house. Go to the licensing board and make sure he's a licensed contractor in your state. Then you'll be protected by state law. Otherwise, you can't be protected by state law.
Now, what is the problem with anonymous care? And where I don't have to say who I am or where I am?
Yes, there you'll see very large companies out there offer services and allow you to remain anonymous. Now think about it. If you've got, let's say, 2,000 professionals that signed on to some of these large companies, and they're out there. And you can go in there and you can announce that you have a problem without identifying who you are, and they're licensed professionals. The very nature of being a licensed professional means that you have obligations. One of the obligations is that you need to report people that are homicidal.
Mm.
So let's say your husband comes into a session with me and tells me that he wants to kill you. If I'm operating out of California, which I am, my state law says I have to call you and tell you your husband sounds like he's pretty serious. He wants to kill you is what he's telling me. Now, that supersedes my obligation to protect his confidentiality, because at this point in time, this is a threat to your life. When there's a threat to life, I can violate his confidentiality and tell you that so you can get yourself out of his way. So, there are laws like that that a licensed professional has to do. Another one is about mandated reporting. Mandated reporting is when you tell me that you're abusing your child, or you give me a reasonable suspicion of child abuse going on in your home. I need to send Child Protective Services out to investigate that. That's, teachers have that obligation, physicians have that obligation, emergency room folks have that. You know, people that are professionals in the entire United States have this mandated reporting obligation. The same is true of elders. If I have a reason to believe that you are abusing an elderly person, then I have to call Protective Services and have that investigated. If you don't even tell me who you are or where you are, if I don't collect the basic amount of information I need to collect, I cannot meet the requirements of my licensure. And those are just a couple of examples. I have to keep notes on you. Some of these places don't keep notes on you. So, sure, they're great. They're making money hand over fist. You may be getting a service from them, but how do you know the quality of the service you're getting? If they're professionals who are mandated by not only their professional groups, their counseling association or psychiatric association or psychological or social national association of social workers, if they're not only required by their groups, but also their state law, to meet certain basic obligations that are in place to protect consumer welfare. Somebody has to protect the kids and the older people and the abused spouses in our society. If the therapist is volunteering to offer their services to a company that strips them of the ability to do that, they're not doing their jobs. They're being very unprofessional. Frankly, they're violating the law. Do you really want to get help from a person who violates even these most basic laws? I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I want a professional who's up to snuff 100%, because if they're up to snuff on the licensing law for their state, they're going to know how to treat me. They're going to have read the latest journal articles and know about how to treat me with my problems with the most current approach, not something they learned 40 years ago. So that's why it's important that consumers be aware of these issues.
Great. Okay, we're running short on time, and I wanted to ask you one more very important question, and that is, why won't many insurance companies pay for online chat with a licensed professional?
The very things I've been talking about are that reason, because the licensed professionals that are working online, especially in online chat rooms and in email, are not following the rules or regulations of the state. They're not using the proper technology. They're not paying attention to their licensing limits. So, in essence, it's the Wild West, and they're getting consumers interested in their services, but they're not following state law.
Okay, I have one last quick question, and that is, where is this all going?
It is all going to delivering services on the net. That's why I have an institute that I started to train professionals about these issues, and we're growing. Just last week, we grew more than 10% of our registered professionals training with us. It's just amazing to see how quickly professionals are getting it. Now the professional associations are coming on board with guidelines. In essence, it's the green light. And the really big picture here is that the federal government in the United States supports the build-out of technology because we're able to reach more people than we ever have. Just yesterday, our President Obama gave was in a meeting of mental health people. There were not even 200 people there. One of the things he stated is that more than 40% of the people in our country do not get the mental health services they need. And more than 50% of the children in our country do not get the mental health services they need during their childhoods. So those are huge numbers. If this were cancer or diabetes, and 50% of our kids having diabetes aren't getting care, something needs to be done. And so the federal government is gearing up, and has been actually for 60 years, to deliver services to people that otherwise would not come in for services. So the idea of having an internet connection where you in the privacy of your home can talk about personal issues, get some input, have a sounding board is here today. Mm-hmm. We just need our consumers to be aware of what a real professional looks like that has appropriate training. And along those lines, we've even written a little ebook that that I want to make open and available to your guests as well.
Okay, please tell our audience very briefly about the ebook and how they can sign up for it.
Yes, thank you. The ebook is called The Consumer Guide to Online Therapy. And we were hoping we were going to have it ready for today. It's not quite ready yet, but it will be available through our magazine, selfhelpmagazine.com. You can look for it there. We're hoping to get it up in the next week or two. But if you want to join our mailing list, you'll see we have a newsletter at the magazine. You go to selfhelpmagazine.com, and you can subscribe to our newsletter, or you can send an email to selfhelpmagnews. So no hyphen, all one word, selfhelpmagnews@aweber.com.
That's great. Well, this is wonderful. I want to thank you, Dr. Mayhew, for being our guest today. I learned so much about this expanding resource, and I know our audience learned as well, and I'm sure that they will utilize much of the information that you shared with them. I'd like to thank you once again and to thank our audience for tuning in today. Join us next time on Tuesday, June the 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time for our live online support group created by and for caregivers and moderated by Marjorie Pabst, who is eCare Diaries caregiving expert. She will be speaking to Dr. Diane Meyer. She is the CEO of Center to Advance Palliative Care, and she will be talking about the misconceptions about palliative care and how it can help caregivers. To learn more about eCare Diary and upcoming shows, please visit us at www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to your personal care diary tool. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is ecare_diary. Thanks again. Bye now.